fairness and equality and opportunity, something we pretty much expect, even demand in our nation, especially in the workplace. I mean, how can you build a strong life if you don't have access to the same opportunities others do? For equality to exist, it has to be more than just simply an idea. It needs to be checked, supported by, facts, data, a couple of good ideas there. Recently, the Trump administration announced that they're doing away with one of those check systems. It's known as EEO-1. The first guest today joins us to explain how this action will impact equal employment opportunities, as well as those whose responsibility it is to ensure them. She's the National Economic Justice Director with Equal Rights Advocates. Sahar Khawaja, how are you today, Sahar?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
And learn more about this. Other points of focus of the Equal Rights Advocate Organization, equalrights.org, is their website. We have that link at our homepage as well. So explain to us, what does the EEO-1 statistic represent? How is it compiled?
So just to back up a second, it is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC's mission to prevent and remedy unlawful employment discrimination and to advance equal employment opportunity, like you said, which is really important for our nation. One way it does this is through the enforcement of well-established laws like Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. To fulfill this mission, the EEOC back in 1966 put in place the EEO-1 data collection. This requires private employers with 100 or more employees and certain federal contractors to report to the EEOC workforce demographics by gender, race, or ethnicity, and broken down by job category. Prior to this, we had not collected this type of workforce data in the United States. And while it's not something that the public is thinking about every day, it has been in the background for over 60 years doing the critical work of helping the federal government, workers, and employers to identify and address employment discrimination. And in terms of how it's compiled, employers and contractors submit their workforce data directly to the EEOC annually through an established process. The EEOC has access to the data and uses it when it receives charges and issuing reports and identifying problematic industries. It makes the data available to state and local agencies if for their enforcement, but otherwise it's not publicly available. That being said, the EEOC does issue kind of aggregate overviews and reports that demonstrate workforce trends.
And this decision came about back on July 21st. And by the way, if you listen, EEOC actually does stand for U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I stress that word commission because when you hear that word, you probably think of a rather sizable overseeing body of people with expertise and insight and ability to do what's right and do what's fair. If I'm understanding right, the EEOC is consisted of merely three people, and the vote to approve this was obviously 2-1 vote. And I was caught off guard by the comments by the chair of the EEOC, Andrea Lucas. She's offering justification, for lack of a better word, of this with the demographic information might actually create discrimination. She's saying that there could be something unconstitutional, at least concerns about whether the data and the collection of it's even constitutional. And the third one was probably totally laughable. It's just too big of a burden to ask businesses to do this anymore. What's your reaction to those?
Yeah, so the EEOC leadership is comprised, as you said, but it is an agency with, lawyers and people on the ground who are doing the agency's work, and it has been clearly defunded under the current administration. And so an agency doing a big task with limited resources has really had to rely on this data. Now it has fewer resources, so it's particularly ironic that the agency is trying to eliminate it. Just to take a step back and to talk about what the agency is doing. So the EEOC under the Trump administration is attempting to completely eliminate this data collection along with five other data collections. And it's issued what it's called a notice of proposed rulemaking and given the public only 30 days to comment. As you said, in terms of what it's using as a justification, the Trump administration is saying the data collection is unnecessary, that it's overly burdensome for employers and the agency. And they're saying, making this really absurd argument that the data collection is potentially unconstitutional and violation of equal protection, because simply by classifying workers by race and sex, that is could be considered a discriminatory act. You know, I think the administration is claiming they want to have a colorblind approach. The problem is that from the inception of this country, America has not been colorblind, nor has it been gender neutral. So we cannot simply proceed by ignoring those facts. I think one thing to keep in mind is that the administration's attempt to limit this data is part of a very comprehensive agenda to dismantle civil rights enforcement, to undercut equal employment opportunity across the board. The government is making this very damaging and sweeping arguments that are essentially to prevent neutral collection of demographic data, which is what the EEOC has been doing all this time. Meanwhile, the administration hypocritically is expanding demographic data collections in other areas like higher education in support of its own agenda and witch hunts.
Now, how is this going to change the way that businesses can behave with their hiring practices? Because there are state laws that require equal opportunity, and it'll be tough to talk state by state, but are there states where there's also paperwork and figures and stats have to be submitted to individual states? Is this going to open the door, what the federal government is doing, is this going to open the door, do you fear, that states can say, well, the government can do this and shut it down, then we can shut it down?
So one thing I want to be super clear about is that the elimination of the data does not change employers' obligations under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. So the underlying anti-discrimination protections are still in place at the federal level. They are unchanged. So workers still have the same rights. It's just about the mechanisms we use to help try to identify that discrimination or to target investigation. That's something that's going away, right? The data that informs those processes to root out discrimination. And so, you know, first, in terms of what the potential consequences of these changes are going to be, I think we need to start with a simple reality check. Race and gender discrimination remain widespread. Women of color in the United States experience astronomically large wage gaps. Black women, for example, are paid only 63 cents on the dollar compared to white man. And that disparity exists, in different numbers across all states. The EEOC, when it created this data collection, recognized a very simple yet important reality. We cannot fix what we cannot see. The EEOC data has been useful in showing us that disparities for Black women are due in large part to very purposeful segregation of Black women into lower paying jobs, both within workplaces and industries. When we get to see that demographic data broken down, we get to get a better sense of what's happening within our workplaces. Where are people, you know, within a particular industry or a place of work? Rescinding the data collection would bring us back into the dark. It would eliminate one of the federal government's most important transparency and accountability tools to identify these workplace disparities, the segregation, and these inequities that we're finding across the nation. When we get rid of the data, we don't get rid of discrimination. We just hide it and make it much harder to address. But like I said, the underlying obligations of employers to comply with Title VII and to keep records still exists under the law. But I just want to point out that there was a hearing that the EEOC held, a hearing this week, where we heard from so many. You know, there were, I think, 22 people who testified in total, and 16 were testifying in opposition to the rule. And they made it very clear that this data collection has helped not just the EEOC, but it's helped employers and workers and social scientists. It's helped us really see trends not just year by year, but over time. And eliminating it is also going to undermine this historical continuity we have in understanding discrimination in our country. I think it's also going to advance this broader agenda to reverse over 60 years of progress and take us back to pre-civil rights era times before we had these meaningful tools to advance civil rights.
And this isn't limited to businesses on the street. And the EEO3 report, the EEO4, which addresses state and local government. Number 3 offer is applied to unions, public school systems, the EEO5. And you mentioned universities, higher education. All those reports are being looked at as for the same actions as is being suggested for the EEO1. And that's got to be frustrating because, as you said, the responsibility of all these institutions, all these operations are still there to be fair and just and equality as a foundation. But where's the check on the system? And there's individuals who will raise their voices, and when there's a problem, there's civil rights attorneys that take cases that address unfair treatment in the workplace. But if you don't have any of these EEO numbers, that's going to be a higher mountain to climb than it already was.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and to clarify, the ones that are being eliminated, the EEO1 to the EEO6 data collections, these have been neutral collections that have been carried out, by both Democratic, Republican administrations for decades, right? Those are the ones that are being eliminated. Meanwhile, the Trump administration, while saying that demographic data collection is potentially a violation of equal protection, is instituting new data collections of its own. The one in higher ed is actually not among these. It's a different one that he's putting in place in order to target universities, for example, that it believes are, trying to advance equal opportunity for populations, for marginalized populations, which have historically, haven't had access. But apart from that point, I think it's really important to note that we are dealing with agencies that have very few resources, and these data collections are so essential towards making them more efficient and effective in doing their jobs with those limited resources. And so it can be very debilitating to eliminate these tools. And so, like you said, in many different areas, not just in the sphere of employment.
So what's the best case scenario? What is the organization that you're with, Equal Rights Advocates, doing? And what can someone listening right now do to join the effort to push back and to raise a voice about this?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think I want to reiterate, one, that Title VII itself doesn't change, that those rights still exist for workers and they can still pursue them, right, using the channels that were already there. It's just going to make it more costly. I also want to mention you had mentioned this earlier, like what are states and localities doing? And I think, we are seeing many states and localities also step up to fill in the gaps. And now we have data reporting requirements in California, in Illinois, in Massachusetts, in New York City, and Colorado, I believe. And it's likely we're going to see more in response to these efforts. States and localities are stepping up to try to really build out their civil rights enforcement infrastructure, where the federal government is essentially trying to dissolve it. So it's important to kind of keep track of what's happening there. And then in terms of the direct response to these efforts, there is a broad coalition of civil rights organizations, social scientists, former and current government leaders, and others who have been opposing the government's attempts at every stage. We showed up to the hearing this week. We're going to be submitting our opposition to the proposed rule, and we're trying to raise public awareness about the importance of the data. And if that fails, the administration will likely see us in court.
Can you find out more about this? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll just mention that we have a take action too, where individuals can submit comments in opposition to the proposed rule, and we really encourage folks to do that. I think the more people who oppose, the better record we create to demonstrate how important this data is, and in order to fight back.
And certainly for you listening, as you raise your voice, you bring attention to somebody else who might not be aware of this, so their voice joins the effort as well. Find out more at the website for Equal Rights Advocates, equalrights.org. She is the National Economic Justice Director. Sehar Khawaja, thank you so much for helping us understand what is happening, how it's being, the attempt is being made to soften the blow, but the dangers and the challenges that it creates and come from the truth that you speak and appreciate it. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.